listening to Faith and Family. I'm Sarah Golseth. Many times when we have the joy of talking with missionaries, they're in the U.S. on home service and shortly on their way back to the mission field. But today, we get to talk with a missionary who has fulfilled her term of service and is now transitioning back to life in the States with new vocations. In studio with me today is Deaconess Rachel Jasif. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you, Sarah. It's good to be here.
Very glad to have you with us. So you're a fellow Concordia University Chicago graduate. Tell me a bit about why you chose Concordia and the Deaconess program and what led you in that direction.
Well, I grew up in the Lutheran church, but yet had no idea what a deaconess was, never had heard of it. I had been thinking about maybe serving in the church, possibly missionary service, but because I didn't know what a deaconess was, I really didn't know what shape that would take. And so when my mom found some information about the deaconess program, I looked more into it. I'd already been thinking about maybe some other Concordias with their other church work programs and maybe social work counseling, but deaconess ministry sounded like the right fit for me, at least on paper. So I looked into it, very much felt that the Lord was guiding that, making it clear, just jump in, Rachel, and see where this takes you. And so after getting to Concordia, I, of course, continued learning more about what that looked like, the diverse ways that deaconesses can serve, and that flexibility of ministry is what really drew me to it. And so I kept on and kept on learning, and the more deaconesses I met, well, number one, I thought, why haven't I met you before? I wish I'd known this, you know, a long time ago. But I'm just thankful that I ended up at Concordia in the deaconess program and meeting all of the awesome peers that I did there, as you yourself know.
Yeah.
So in and outside the deaconess program, it was a very formative time, as I know it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thankful to have ended up at Concordia, to have found deaconess ministry when I did, and to continue learning all the different ways that deaconesses can serve the church.
Sure. And was mission or service in the church something you had always wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, I remember from the time I was pretty young, thinking it'd be pretty cool to have a job where I pretty much just got to talk to people about Jesus. But the older I got, I realized, okay, this needs to take shape somehow so that I can also make a living and support, you know, living a life. So, sorry, I forgot initially what you...
Mission work was something that was always something that you wanted to do from the time you were a little kid. And as part of the deaconess program, you have an internship.
Right.
Was an international internship something that you had kind of hoped for?
Yeah, thank you. Getting me back on track. So I had become interested in different cultures. I started studying Spanish in high school, so had an eye on Latin America. And then, of course, going into the deaconess program and finding out there are deaconesses that work in all sorts of different ministries, foreign mission work being one of those. Mm-hmm. And, of course, within that, it's diverse in itself. So I think God just continued to open doors in that way and leading me down that path. And I kept meeting different people who encouraged me toward that. And God used that, all those different relationships, to open those doors as well. And here I sit. And as I reflect on, I guess in my case, the past 5 years of serving as a missionary with the LCMS, it feels kind of like a whirlwind. So much life in really a short amount of time. I feel like I've lived in the experiences the Lord has given me. And I know that, of course, mission work is everywhere. I've just been given a chance to serve in a place very different from where I grew up.
Yeah, yeah. So your internship was in Lima, Peru, and that was for 2 years about?
It was just about 2 years, yep.
So what kind of work were you doing in Lima?
So when I was in Lima, at the time, it was a very, very new church plant, and we were trying to establish what we were calling a mercy house. Now it has certainly grown since that time. But when I was in Lima, it was just a dream on paper, kind of, you know, with a strategic plan and all these ideas and kids we wanted to reach out to. And so I spent the first big big chunk of my internship just trying to find a location mm-hmm. with fellow missionaries for this center in order to really be an established entity in a new community that didn't even really have the attention of the government mm-hmm. for aid in different needs that they had. And so we wanted to very much establish that we weren't just a flash in the pan. We weren't just coming in to toss some aid that wouldn't actually be connected to anything long-lasting.
Sure.
And so God has certainly blessed that ministry, and I just got to be a part of laying some of the first bricks, and that's been, you know, built upon in the past years, and now there's a church plant along with it, mm-hmm. and they've even expanded to different communities in Lima, which is really exciting to see. And I frankly feel really humbled and privileged to have gotten to be a small part of something that's really bigger than all of us. And so it's exciting to see how God has carried that on.
Yeah. What was the reception like when you first arrived, the reception from the people that were already there?
Well, there had been a mission team there for a couple of years, and I went with a colleague of mine, fellow geo-missionary Julia Mueller, mm-hmm. who was there serving for a year. And so she and I arrived at the same time, and we had a very warm reception. The missionary team had prepared all sorts of things, including finding us a place to live, which is
kind of important.
Absolutely. We were very grateful for that. But, you know, the Peruvian people, too, are very, very open to learning and wanting to know about other places in the world. And so I found dialoguing with people about faith fairly easy, even with people I didn't know, mm-hmm. like taxi drivers. And some of it may be because I physically stick out. I don't look the way that other folks do there. I physically stuck out, which I ended up almost forgetting after I got used to my bearings around Lima. But the Lord opened doors through that as well. And people who wondered, you know, why are you here? Well, let me tell you. And yeah. How much time do you have? Because that's how I kind of was able to, I guess, change the tone of what I was saying. How much information do they really want? Or, you know, is it a quick conversation, a quick passing by? So
sure. Now, with these mercy houses that you were able to establish, what kinds of changes or the impact did you see of those houses on the kids and the families that you were dealing with?
Well, because I got to be a part of the initial stages, a lot of what I've seen, the impact has been secondhand from mm-hmm. colleagues who are there serving still, like Deaconess Caitlin Warden and mm-hmm. others. And so I've seen and heard more after the fact. But from what I can tell, I mean, we were establishing this in a place that didn't have, wasn't a church presence. Mm-hmm. A lot of the kids were latchkey kids and are, you mm-hmm. know, even to the present day, who mm-hmm. who can sometimes find themselves really vulnerable to all sorts of things like theft and drugs and gangs and violence. I mean, kind of you name it. Where the first Mercy House that I was involved with was established in a community called La Victoria mm-hmm. in Lima. It's close to just a few blocks away from the largest wholesale market in at least Peru. Wow. Maybe a portion of South America. I would have to look that up. But the point is, it's just this vast, expansive market that you can basically find literally anything you could ever yeah. kind of conceive of. You can probably find it in this market, which means then that there's just a huge influx of people. So mm-hmm. great opportunity to be brushing elbows with new people who have contacts all over the country, really. Mm-hmm. And in particular, children are vulnerable in this area because of all that movement and demand for work. And so some of the kids end up working on the streets. And mm-hmm. so the initial dream of the Mercy House model was to be an outreach to street kids, mm-hmm. specifically kids working and maybe even living in the streets. At least at the time I was in Peru, the Lord kind of brought a different demographic to us. And so I don't recall any of the children I personally knew working on the street. However, there's a whole new batch mm-hmm. of kids since then. And mm-hmm. and so the Lord brought us different kids at the time. But it has continued developing. And like I mentioned, they've now been able to expand into another region of Lima. Mm-hmm. that also has, I think it's the largest district of the city, which simply put means that there's a ton of influx and traffic of people. And so once again, having a stronghold in those types of communities opens tons of doors to impact people with the gospel, and then who knows where they're going to end up with that.
Sure. Now, you said the place in where the first Mercy House was like it was a forgotten group of people. Was it the park that the house was in? Did the government even know that park existed?
Well, they certainly do now. At the time when we were kind of narrowing down which community we wanted to be in, mm-hmm. and weren't really coming up with anything in terms of a location to rent that was appropriate for our needs, we came to understand that, I don't know if it was on a map or basically in the eyes of the municipality, which is what they call it, the localized government there, they didn't really know where the park was or what name it was under.
Wow.
So our presence being there has really brought a lot of attention, much needed attention, to that community. And it was interesting to see them, even the government, fixing up the park little by little the longer mm-hmm. we were there, because attention was growing. And so now, like I mentioned before, there's a church plant, and Pastor yeah. Josh Gale is pastor there, and Pastor Eddie Hosh and Herb Birch, and mm-hmm. like I mentioned, Caitlin, and you know, there are other missionaries serving there now as well. So it's just been exciting to see how the Lord has used our presence, a bunch of foreigners who didn't really know anyone in that community, to bring positive change. And of course, the overarching hope is that through that ministry, kids and their families would come to know the gospel. And sure. that is happening.
And that's incredibly important.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
after your time in Peru, graduation, your first call as an actual deaconess from Concordia, and where was that call?
I served my first call in the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Santiago, which is the second largest city in the country. Mm-hmm. And so that transition from being a geo missionary in Peru and getting to carry over those experiences really well prepared me, I think, for service in the Dominican. Very different cultures, mm-hmm. different cuisines, different social norms, but yet the same need for the gospel, certainly, and the same language, although people speak the language very differently between those two places, which is often very fun.
What were some of the things that you learned in Peru that you were able to establish maybe right away as a new career missionary in the Dominican Republic?
Well, I guess first and foremost, being able to hone my Spanish skills in Peru and have friends that corrected me when I needed it greatly helped me in my ability to communicate right off the bat with people, which sure. then meant I was able to jump pretty quickly into teaching classes mm-hmm. to the deaconess students who were there. So the language, certainly, as well as the concept of time. I didn't get to the field feeling flustered when things wouldn't pan out the way I had scheduled them. Mm-hmm. There were exceptions to that, as with any learning process, I think. But so the concept of time and some of the social norms were pretty similar. How to greet people, mm-hmm. common things that make living life, I guess, more normal as mm-hmm. someone's adjusting to a new place of service.
Sure, sure. So you mentioned teaching classes. Was that your primary work as a deaconess?
Yes. So in the Dominican Republic, I was primarily teaching deaconess classes in three different church plants
oh, wow.
around Santiago. So during the week, I would generally teach one class in each church plant a week. Sometimes, of course, that would change because there are a variety of number of students in each place. Life happens. Mm-hmm. The ladies all have families of some size and nature that they're taking care of. So sometimes things had to change. But I was primarily teaching theology classes and working alongside fellow missionaries on the field, especially my fellow deaconesses, to try to establish and formalize a bit more the deaconess training curriculum and kind of field work experiences. So mm-hmm. it's still in process, but But there's been a lot of forward motion in that, and certainly a lot of work that had been laid down long before my time by mm-hmm. vicars and previous deaconesses to try to start building interest in that and get the ladies studying God's words. So sure. I got to be a small piece of that.
And how important is growing the number of deaconesses in the Dominican Republic?
Well, in the Dominican as well as other Latin churches, that's a main focus. One of the several main focuses of the region, because as we're training pastors and planting congregations, we want the women in the church to also be well-versed in theology and God's word and being able to put that into practice to support the ministry that's already going on. So in the case of the Dominican specifically, these ladies that I taught were already serving in a lot of capacities. Mm-hmm. And so this was simply giving them the theology behind, why do we serve as Christians? Why do we want to go and visit the church member who hasn't shown up for a while? Why do we want to go and visit the family who doesn't have a lot of support and they have children with developmental and intellectual disabilities? Mm-hmm. You know, so this has become an integral piece of the fabric of that church plant.
Yeah.
And so it was really a beautiful thing to see the merciful hearts that these women have, and to be able to walk with them, to learn so much from them. These ladies, in many ways, taught me how to be a deaconess in terms of being feet on the ground and learning from them day in, day out. But to be able to give them the gift of the theological teaching that I had been given at Concordia, mm-hmm. so that they can understand this gospel motivation that we have, that was a really beautiful gift that I was given.
Yeah. Did you see a lot of changes in the women, their hearts for service grow a lot as you were teaching them?
Absolutely. I mean, the number of students in my time, because it was pretty limited, the number of students didn't necessarily grow, but mm-hmm. I was very privileged to walk with them in a number of just life circumstances mm-hmm. that demonstrated to me their faith, their patience sometimes in situations that I myself would very much struggle, mm-hmm. and their desire to reach out and visit those who are often ostracized and left out mm-hmm. in the society. That was humbling to me, which is why I felt so privileged to get to teach them, because it was, in many ways, I mean, it was reciprocal.
Sure. Did it, the teaching them in turn gave you a deeper understanding of what it really means to be a deaconess?
Absolutely. It absolutely did. Not only in preparing for my classes, but then sometimes even when our class would kind of derail a little bit, sometimes that is when we had the most insightful conversations.
Sure.
and the most practical application of the concepts we were studying.
Sure. How receptive are the people in the Dominican Republic to the gospel? Because it is a majority Catholic country, so being able to teach them the gospel, but from a different perspective, maybe?
Right. Dominicans are they're a very open people, mm-hmm. which lends itself to being a huge open door to share the gospel. But it also means that a lot of people are very vulnerable mm-hmm. to other messages.
Sure.
And so something that all of us missionaries, myself included, are always trying to teach and emphasize is that, you know, number one, what is the true gospel at its core, mm-hmm. at its most simplified? Because only then can any of us recognize when we hear false messages.
Sure.
And so, for example, if we were doing a home visit, and this would happen all the time, that someone would have their Bible on their coffee table, perhaps, along with a Jehovah's Witnesses pamphlet.
Oh, wow.
And maybe the Mormon missionaries are also kind of doing the circuit in the community and visiting. And then they ask you, as a Lutheran missionary, to pray for them. And it just has emphasized to me that the openness is a wonderful, wonderful thing, but how important it is for us to be teaching our new church members that not everyone who wants to share with you is going to tell you truth, because they themselves mm-hmm. have been deceived by falsehood.
Right.
So the open door is amazing. Mm-hmm. People talk about God all the time. And there's certainly, like you mentioned, it is a predominantly Roman Catholic country, but often in name, I am certain that there are very devout Roman Catholic Christians in that country. However, the theology of the Roman Catholic Church in the Dominican Republic, as in many Latin countries, has been synchronized a lot with things like Santeria, which is of the occult, and mm-hmm. other varieties of spirit worship and ancestor working with the ancestors, mm-hmm. trying to work your own salvation type of concepts.
Sure.
And then you throw in the charismatic Pentecostal movements that have swept across the country and confused a lot of people, putting their focus on themselves instead of on Christ.
Sure.
And so the opportunities are really endless in terms of the conversations that are pretty easy to find yourself in. I mean, I've talked to taxi drivers and shop owners, and in addition to church members and people who actually seek out a Christian to talk to. So
sure.
I found myself, I guess, in situations that I never really expected.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah.
But the point is, the open door is there, but teaching people, how do we distinguish what's coming through it?
Yeah, that's very, very important. So now you're back in the States, thinking back on the last 5 years of your service. Do you have a moment or a specific thing that you really loved to be able to do, or an experience or something?
Let's see. Well, there were a lot. Everything from the amazing people that I grew to love, to the openness of the culture, mm-hmm. the music. The weather wasn't too bad either, I'll be honest. But overall, I think the first thing in my mind is connected to your previous question about people's openness to the gospel. Mm-hmm. The fact that people will engage you, even if they don't know you, in conversation about God, or ask you why you're there, or ask, what is a Lutheran? Or what's the focus of the Lutheran Church? And getting to share with them that it's all about Jesus, mm-hmm. that is the most, that's my favorite thing. And that could be the case anywhere, I know. But in particular, that culture lends itself to open, fairly easy conversation in many cases, mm-hmm. To get to share that with people. And a lot of people know the terminology of the Christian faith,
sure.
but what it all means and how it connects to Jesus. So many people have lived their entire lives knowing things by rote memorization, but
right.
never knowing, what does this have to do with my eternal salvation, the certainty of that in Christ, and what does this have to do with my life today and my family?
Sure.
Those connections have not been fleshed out for the majority of people that I met.
Sure. We have just about a minute left. What are you hopeful for going forward? I know you're still very in the beginning parts of transitioning back to life in the States. What are you hopeful for? What do you hope to be able to do or serve here with your new husband? Those kinds of things.
Well, in terms of the field, I certainly look forward to seeing how the Lord continues working there, as he has long before I ever set foot there. But in terms of moving forward, I'm excited to see what opportunities God puts before my husband Phil and I to serve, maybe in situations that we don't expect to find ourselves.
Sure.
Or maybe exactly as we expect to find ourselves. It's all pretty open at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see what God sets in front of us in order to put to hopefully good use the things that both of us have learned as missionaries.
Sure.
And see where that takes us.
Sure. With me in studio today is Deaconess Rachel Jasif, and you can learn more about Rachel's work and missionary work in Peru and the Dominican Republic at lcms.org/Jasif. That's J-A-S-E-P-H. You can also learn about how you can serve as a missionary at lcms.org/service. Or if you're interested in Concordia's Deaconess program, check out their website at cuchicago.edu/deaconess. Rachel, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.